Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome to The Brainstorm, episode 74. Nick, we'll kick it off with Disney and their controlling stake. And then Frank, you're on. So you know we're talking AI again. Nick, what did Disney do and why does it matter?
Yes, so Disney has made a bid for a controlling stake in FuboTV, which operates in the live streaming TV market. So you can think of cable repackaged for the new age of digital streaming. Price is still a pressure point in this space. I like to say what is old is new again. Pricing is very much in line with what you'd be accustomed to in the broadcast and cable era. So you're talking about $75 plus for a package on a monthly basis in the live TV space, but it does get you most of what you would want in a live service, which is typically sports. So you get your NFL games, MLB, NHL, NBA, the major four, and then everything else that comes with it. It's a big deal because Fubo had actually been out there in the market trying to block through the courts, the new venture, which is, I now believe is dead, called Venue, which was Disney, Warner, and Fox trying to come together to create a one streaming package for all of your sports needs, which I've long said would be the greatest streaming package ever. Just combine every sporting event possible and throw it in a streaming package. I think you have a home run product. A lot of reasons why that won't happen and would be very hard, mostly because of regional sports contracts. But you know, this is where we are today, which is you have a number of people continuing to cut the cord. I think we're still in double digit cord cutting, decline, and the streaming market continues to grow. But as these markets continue to grow, the price has very much flattened. I think people are probably exhausted getting a dollar to raise on their Netflix subscription. So these services are looking for new ways to generate revenue. Live TV seems like a very optimal solution. Not only can you charge on a monthly basis, but you also have the advertising as well. That's where we are. I think Disney is making a bid for Fubo for many reasons. They already have Hulu, which comes with a package for the live TV, but they're competing against Google and YouTube TV, which is very much a formidable opponent in the space, partly because they went out and acquired the rights to NFL Sunday Ticket 2 years ago. So that drives a lot of demand for their subscription. I believe they're over 8 million subs, Disney plus Fubo to combined. So Hulu Live plus Fubo would be just north of 6 million. So still behind YouTube, but now you just have a kind of a two-player race. And then you have some of the cable companies that have repackaged and distribute like Sling and a few other services that definitely have some demand and subscribers. But I think these are now the two largest services.
All right. Simplify for us. Who's winning? Who's losing?
I would say Google with YouTube TV is very much winning. I think it's a massive driver for them in terms of just share of time. If you look at the numbers, YouTube, the standalone app, so not YouTube TV, different, is the number one service streamed on connected TVs. So if you look at the numbers, YouTube is typically north of 10% in terms of total streaming time. And then, you know, you think about YouTube TV and what that means as a growth opportunity, considering they charge around $83 a month for that package. That doesn't include NFL Sunday Ticket. That's an additional, you know, 200, 300 plus for a season. So I think it's, you know, they have a stranglehold on the live TV market in this new age of streaming. But, you know, Disney is trying to come in and make a play and garner some of the eyeballs that have moved into this space.
And loser, traditional cable.
Traditional cable. Yeah, I think cable broadcasts. And this is where it becomes, I think, an interesting discussion, because if you think about Disney, they still have plenty of networks and exposure to the traditional cable space. The way that that operates, you know, they get a carriage fee for offering their networks to these bundled cable services. So they have to be, you know, careful not to completely disrupt themselves by moving, you know, too many people into the streaming space before you're at price parity with what they were generating in the cable space, broadcast space. But I think, yes, the cable world, it's not a question of if, it's just when. It's definitely happened, I would say, a bit slower than we had anticipated, but it's primarily due to factors like, you know, renewals around these major sporting contracts that typically have a sliver for cable and broadcast, and then more and more has been going over to streaming, but no one has made the full leap yet. I think we'll see that probably in the next 5 to 10 years, but it is a slow crawl.
Do you have the number? What percent have cut the cord?
Total, I would say there's right now more households with exposure to CTV in the US than cable.
CTV? If you look,
CTV is connected TV, so you can think of streaming households. But typically, and this is why I don't want to pinpoint a number here, you have houses that are both, right? You have houses that have a Roku stick, but also have a cable box. And so there's some deduplication you need to make in the numbers. But, you know, CTV has been growing, whereas cable from both a user and revenue basis has been on a decline since I started at ARC in 2018, and long before that.
So what do you use?
I was a full cord cutter, but I typically will sign up for YouTube TV around this time to get my playoff football. So I'm back on the streaming live TV services, but only until probably the end of February.
And who do you have winning the Super Bowl?
I will take the Baltimore Ravens. Sorry, Frank. I know they play your Buffalo Bills next weekend, but I'm going to take the Ravens. It's Lamar's time.
Go Bills. It's Josh's time.
Frank, what about you? What's your,
my football picks or my take on the streaming versus cord cutting discussion?
Either.
Well, I think it's funny that Nick said, like, you know, they need to be careful about hitting like monetization parity, because I feel like it's going to be really hard to hit when you have this new paradigm that people have gotten used to in streaming, and now you're adding an ad load to it. Like, maybe I'm just like one subset of customers, but like, I watched a series last week and was so, it was on Peacock, and so annoyed by the ads, because they don't seem like they're timed with the show anymore, and they're supposed to be targeted, but they're not well targeted. And I just said, I'm paying $5 a month to see ads. I'd rather pay $15 a month and not see ads. And for me, that's, you know, my consumer preference, but it's probably lower monetization for Peacock if I'm paying $15 instead of them showing me ads every 10 minutes.
It's I would say that you might be in the minority. It is pretty interesting to see the splits between ad-free versus ad-tier services. Hulu, I think, is the most mature that's been operating both a freemium and a premium. So freemium being you monetize by ads. The last time I looked at those numbers, it was a 70-30 split. So 70% of the users had opted into the ad tier because I think the thought of paying upfront more money is maybe daunting for some, especially when you're paying for multiple services. I would agree with you. Like, I'm not a huge fan of seeing the ads, especially if they're not relevant. I think you don't use Roku, so shame on you, because they are relevant on the Roku platform. But I think you might be in the minority. I would say that a lot of people I talk to think in the same way, but then when you look at the underlying data, it tends to disagree with what you hear out there.
Sounds like you're talking to a specific demographic.
I think I'm talking to people who still are siphoning off their parents' accounts. So, you know, saying that they're willing to pay is a bit of a lie because they're not actually paying. I think once it becomes your own bill, you probably opt into the ad tier.
That's right. And you start again, then when you have kids and you look at their bill too, then you really say, okay, let's get the ads in here.
Right.
But it's funny how it all works, because I'm not on my parents, but Amex pays my subscription bill because of that $20 a month promotion they have. So if that went away, maybe I'd be more price sensitive.
Well, I think what you'll see is more bundling. And we saw that, I think, last year, you know, we had two major bundles come out. One was, you know, around Netflix. The other one around, I believe it was HBO, now Max. I think we'll see bundling. I think credit cards, you know, will start to offer these as free. You'll probably get it packaged into your, you know, broadband and Wi-Fi. I think a lot of this will end up being subsidized by companies, and they'll very much try to push you into the ad tier so they make, you know, additional money off of you.
All right. So we got streaming, Super Bowl picks, and now we can move on to AI.
Frank, the real Super Bowl.
The real Super Bowl. Frank, last week, CES, Jensen gives his keynote. Obviously, a lot to take away from that. People are chattering all about that. You know, you've got DeepSeek still in the background as well, and, you know, the efficiency there. But so maybe high level thoughts, take it wherever you want. Do you want to go DeepSeek route, which is a little bit older but still interesting, or, you know, talk about the future?
Yeah, let me give high level lay of the land, and then we'll see where we end up. But yeah, the NVIDIA presentation at CES, I'd break it down into four parts. It's a consumer electronics show, so gaming is usually front and center for them there. They released their new or announced their new gaming chips, which, no surprise, bring a lot of AI to make games more performant. It looks super cool. I mean, the standout statistic for me is the new version of DLSS, which stands for Deep Learning Super Sampling, is now, I think, generating 3 out of every 4 frames. And basically, game developers don't need to spend as much time optimizing their frame rate anymore because the AI is doing it for them, which I think is pretty cool. Second segment was all about Blackwell. This is really a rehash of announcements they've already made last year. Those chips are now in mass production. High level generation on generation improvements continue. Blackwell is 4 times better based on NVIDIA's benchmarks than Hopper in terms of AI training. Inference, there's a lot of math and different types of statistics you can use, but at least that good or better generation on generation performance improvement. The next two sections were about more the application layer, AI agents on, let's say, the enterprise productivity side, and what NVIDIA is doing there to make it easier for enterprises to build and deploy their own AI systems. That's advantageous to them because the more people that are using AI, the more people that need accelerated compute to run their models. And then on the physical AI side, this was actually a pretty big section of the keynote. They're building their own foundation models to understand. It's trained on 20 million hours of real-world footage of nature and people and basically like physics. So the model understands more of the physical world. They're calling it a world foundation model. What we've heard is that compared to previous models that in this space that NVIDIA has released in the past, which is kind of like a starter kit that you need to build a lot on to make it real world useful, this seems like out of the box more real world applicable or ready for prime time use than past. So it seems like they're spending more time there, which is interesting. And then the applications of that, it's called Cosmos, by the way, the applications of that are use cases in humanoid robots and autonomous driving, which is basically robots on wheels. So they basically gave this kind of, you know, full stack presentation from the infrastructure to the platform that they're building to the applications on top and how NVIDIA kind of works throughout that entire process. And it's something that I think they've been building for the AI space for so long. They have this kind of fullness of vision that still sets them kind of apart from a competitor like AMD, who like sees a similar future, but is building up the components to get there. And we think will happen over time, but it does take time relative to where NVIDIA is.
Side note, one of the interesting parts of the presentation or what came out last week featuring NVIDIA was their ACE platform, which is their gaming platform for autonomous game characters. Did you see any of that, Frank? I thought it was pretty interesting.
No, didn't see that. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so it's a platform to help create the NPCs in games, make them, you know, generative AI. And one of the features that games can now introduce is in boss battles. You know, typically what you can do is, you know, just watch a YouTube video and figure out how someone else beat the boss. But now using the generative AI platform, you could never beat the boss in the same way. So the boss battle can never happen the same way twice and result in the user winning because it's continuously learning and being predictive in how people try and defeat it, which I thought was, that's, you know, it's going to make games very hard potentially.
Yeah, I feel like that's also like a great example of like, even if you like think of a traditional like RPC game where you're like walking around talking to non-player characters, like, you know, they have the same canned four things that they say.
Yeah.
But with generative AI, you can actually have a real conversation with them because you can, you know, it's almost very Westworldy where they have their own backstory and persona. And like, depending on what you ask them, it actually changes how they respond in a unique and authentic way that I think like dramatically increases potentially like the user experience and how like enveloped you get in the game and how much the game molds back to how you're playing it. But also is like a sneaky way to like embed inference everywhere. Like you're taking something that's running, you know, on somebody's local PlayStation or like on a Microsoft server, and you're turning that into something that needs to run on a GPU for every single person that's playing it.
Right. Yeah, this is, it's not just opponents, but I think it was PUBG is introducing the co-playable characters. So when you're in a battle royale game, sometimes you don't have a full, you know, team of actual humans playing with you. Now you can have an autonomous agent act as your teammate and play with you in a more human-like way, which I think, yeah, to your point, this is just going to make the amount of time people spend gaming probably go up because it doesn't get repetitive in the way that you just explained. It'll always be a new, exciting, different arc or battle. And people already play games for a ridiculous amount of time, so, you know, we're going to be living fully in the metaverse.
And I think to connect it all, right, you know, maybe this, what year is this? I feel like this was back in at the New York office, Nick, is like Netflix call, you know, they always say we're not competing against other streaming services. We're just like competing against time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that really does tie, right? It's like, what is going to take time plus eyeballs? And I think already, you know, we've heard some social apps, you know, with Gen Z and young generation, generative partners or friends, something like that, extremely addictive. Nick, I watched you spend about 20 minutes bullying online AIs. Couldn't help yourself.
I would like the testing the limitations of what is acceptable.
So it will be interesting. It will be interesting to see what bucket is siphoning time in the future, especially as all of these start to blur with entertainment and knowledge and generative capability.
Well, yeah, and to put a like full circle, you know, that's how the web team, you know, that's how everything really does connect. Because even when it becomes part of the enterprise equation, if you start to think about the productivity lift on the enterprise side that AI agents might and will have, you have to ask yourself the question, does this mean people will spend more time working or more time playing games if they can accomplish what is necessary to do their job in half the time? And so we, you know, Frank and I and the rest of the team continually bat that question back and forth, because if we go from a 5-day work week to a 4-day work week, what does that mean for the consumer space? Well, that means more time spent
one day worth of gaming.
That ultimately leads to growth in the consumer space and growth in the enterprise space. So that's typically how we view, you know, the portfolio and how we think about these companies on the same playing field. Because you're right, you know, everyone's competing for eyeballs. And if there's more time now because enterprise work goes down because agents do everything for us, that just means more eyeballs and more time.
I think you got to flip it on its head. It's not going from a 5-day work week to a 4-day work week. It's going from a 2-day game week to a 3-day game week.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Great discussion. Keep it here under 20 minutes and we'll see everyone next week. Nick, you got a haircut this past week?
I did.
Same.
Nice.
Same.
Frank.
Wow.
Oh, look at us.
We've all synced.
All right.
All right.
See you.
See everyone next week.